Again, it's a joy to be with you this day, and but in the sadness, the fact is it probably will be the last day that I will ever say Mass for you here or be with you for Mass at St. John's, because I am going to be a pastor now. After 9 years of doing vocation work, they're going to send me out to be a pastor at St. Andrew's in Saline, Michigan. So I'll be busy there and probably won't be helping out in any other parish. I'll be looking for help in my own. And so I want you to pray for the people of St. Andrew's, as they're going to have to put up with me, hopefully for a long time. And at the same time, I want to announce, if you do not know, the new vocation director in June will be Father John Whitlock. And if you haven't heard, he was here in Jackson at Queens for a little while, so he'll be a very familiar face. And I'm quite sure Father Chaz will be tapping his shoulder, so you'll probably get to see him. If you don't know him, you'll get to know him. And what a chance to go out with you on such a beautiful note. Woman caught in adultery. Yeah, beautiful note. But it's a beautiful note because there's something I really enjoy about such a passage as this. Jesus gives us lots of parables, and parables are amazing because they can fit so many things and you can fit so much of your life into them. But there's something different when you have a real story of a real encounter with a real person. That though it is a real person, real encounter, real circumstances, still fits your own life in some way. Now, we don't want to necessarily think of us as an adulterous woman or someone caught in adultery. And yet, if you read the scriptures, a lot of prophets in the Old Testament, Hosea and others, use the analogy of all of us being adulterers, because he uses the analogy of a marriage between God and us. And any time we do not see him and as our fullness of joy, everything that we want, and we go seeking something else we think is better, he said, that's adultery. It's a form of spiritual adultery with our God. And so indeed, there is in some, each and every one of us, unless there's some little sinless ones here who've been baptized and haven't yet reached that age, but most of us are right in the story. And so we can relate to this woman, and we can relate, okay, maybe we don't relate necessarily to that sin as easily, but we relate to sin and to the condition that she's in. How many times do we make choices based on what other people think of us or what we suppose they will think of us? Here she is, standing before everybody, judged. And so, in the reverse, we will say, I do not ever want to be in that position, so how often do I decide to make a decision based on how's it going to look for me? The end game. When it's done, what are people going to think of me? And so, it isn't truly about the good of another, or even the good for me, or the good for the world. It's about what will I look like? Now, there can be times when that's important, and it's true that, hey, if I do this, they're pretty sure they're going to misunderstand that, so I don't do that because that could be scandal. Paul talks about eating meat that's been offered to the gods. Okay, if it's going to scandalize somebody, don't do it. But still, something like that is thinking about the good of the other. I'm talking about when it's just pure down to the point that I don't want to look bad. I want to keep my reputation. So that's my first thought of why I do things. Well, that, again, is related very much to this today, because there she stands before everybody. She's judged. And we don't want that. And yet, St. Francis of Assisi told his brothers not to care a thing about what people say about you. Do what's right. Don't care a thing about what people say about you. And by the way, don't care a thing about what they say good about you. Bad or good. Doesn't matter. And he said that because he said, nobody really has enough to judge you anyways. Nobody knows enough of the circumstances inside and out of this situation when you did what you did or refrained from doing what you did. They have no idea. Never enough to make such a judgment. God alone does. He's the only one that knows all of the circumstances. And so as we look at this story today, who's alone the only one that doesn't condemn the woman? God alone is the only one that doesn't condemn. And in fact, well, we might say, and the woman too, she didn't want to be condemned, so two people there, her and God, did not want her condemned. And yet everybody else was there to condemn her. We hear of Jesus saying through Isaiah the prophet, you know, I have formed for myself a new people that they might announce my praise. And what are we called to praise? This mercy. This God who knows me through and through. Now, the reality is we're not saying we don't judge, we're going to stop judging, you know, adultery and other sins. Let's not judge that. No, we still have to do that. But I can judge adultery as wrong without having to judge the adulteress. Because I don't know why she chose that. That is wrong, but I don't know why. So what do I have? What categories do I have? What background do I have? How much do I have that could make it so easy to just condemn and say she is responsible? Paul today also says to us, you know, it doesn't matter what anyone thinks. He says that more specifically in other places, but he's saying it here in the sense that I consider everything as loss. I don't care that anybody judges me. I just want him. And he goes on to say that I haven't possessed him. He's possessed me. I can't even take him. He wills to take me. That's all that matters. Paul says, throw it all the rest of it out. And it's all behind me now. I just look forward, straight ahead to him. So let's go back to the woman and put it in context. You know, there are some historical, critical commentators and others who look at it in a deep sense of what's going on here. And they have posited something that's very interesting. And I heard about it and I said, yeah, okay, this makes a little sense. Let's look at the rest of the story. Start with this line. Let the one among you without sin. But first this one. They said this. They came and asked him, you know, what should we do with this woman? Should we stone her? They said this to test him so that they could have some charge to bring against him. What does that mean? That means this was plotted. This whole scenario was plotted. Think about it. How are they going to find a woman in adultery? Do you think she's going to do that out where anyone could find her and see her? No, she's going to be very hidden. And there's the reality that no one can commit adultery alone. There was somebody else with her. And so it's been posited, and it really makes things look very much different when you think of this. It could have been quite possibly one of the guys standing in that circle around the woman holding a stone was the adulterer with her. He was the adulterer with her. And all of the other guys could very well have known that. It was a setup. They found a poor girl who had given herself over to a life of desperation in times where, like, if she was a widow or something went wrong or somebody divorced her, she was left on her to her own devices. That's usually where that profession begins, to give themselves away for a price. So most likely it was one of these guys, probably purposely went in there with everybody else knowing it so that then we could catch her, and he was scot-free.
So if that was the case, now listen to what Jesus says. Let the one among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. If he was standing in that circle of men, not only he, but everyone in that circle of men knew he was who Jesus was talking to. And subsequently, everyone else, because they knew, they put him up to that. Now, if that's the case, how guilty does this woman look comparably to everybody there? And that's why Jesus says elsewhere, do not judge, lest ye be judged. The measure you measure will be measured back. Who of us have enough to measure one sin in anyone else? Again, I'm not saying that act isn't evil, but my ability to know why that person did it is impossible. I don't even know why I do half the things I do. And yet I feel I can judge somebody else. So that's what the Lord is trying to open up through a real scenario for us. And yet, we struggle so much. I heard recently a priest, a good priest. I really like his stuff. He gives presentations on TV and on radio and CDs. I'm not going to say who it is because I really like him. He does a great job. Now, nevertheless, he had this speculative question that was asked of him. Speculative meaning, you know, we don't really know, but this is the way I think it would be. But I just could not agree with what he thought it would be. And what he was saying was, in heaven, when we're all in front of everybody, God's not going to tell everybody our sins. Nobody's going to know, because it's kind of a thought of forgive and forget. But I don't think that's a little bit not quite understanding the beauty of what it's going to be. All of our sins, and right now we just saw an opportunity with Encounter Ministry to talk about healing. Of course, the healing of the body is one thing, and that's very important, but it's so much less important than the healing of the soul. And that's what Encounter Ministries and other ministries now are really zeroing in on, that healing of the body, just like when Jesus did it, is meant to lead you to trusting him to touch your soul. That's much scarier. In our soul are the wounds of all the sins that have been perpetrated against us and the wounds of all the sins that I have perpetrated against others. The effects of those wounds will always be with me. They build the character of whom I am, good or ill. Christ came back with wounds. That's the amazing thing. When he rose, he still had the wounds. But now he's been glorified through those wounds. When we stand in heaven, it's my belief, we're going to know everything everybody did. You're going to know everything I've done and not done. But I'm going to know why. I'm going to know the circumstances. I'm not going to just sit there and account, you did this. I'm going to go, oh, look at what happened to this poor child. Look at what happened to this woman. Look at who was more used that day, abused that day. And I will see that in every one of you, for in all the things that you've done. Now, that isn't there to say, hey, let's just go ahead and go on our way and don't worry about sin anymore because, all these circumstances made me do it. No. But I have to stop looking at my neighbor and thinking I've got it all figured out. I have to give it to the Lord. And two things we hear from the Lord today. He does not want to condemn you. He may be the only one. And he's also the only one who knows you. He is the only one.